You're listening to Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera, your host. Busy, busy day, busy, busy night for moi, although we'll get through this hour. The second hour, you're going to have a replay of Julius Holt and Lamont Hundley. That was a great show. I thought really it was a good show.
Did you already tell our operations manager?
They're well aware of this, yes.
Oh, good.
Yes, so I'm going to give you the hour off.
I was wondering, oh, Tom, you're going to have to punt.
No. They're on it. They're on it. So I got to go. Tonight's the first night of the Little Olsen Fantasy Camp get together, so I got to run up there and do that.
Yeah, that's right.
Looking forward to that tonight. Looking forward to today.
Is everybody in town?
They're getting into town.
Coming in today?
Craig McMillan's going to be in late tonight, so I think he's the only one that coming in at the party, coming to the party. But Salim Sotomayor, A.J. Bramlett, all those guys will be in here shortly. We have a party going on later. So today I'm going to talk to you. Having a different kind of show. The game is coming up here Saturday with U of A and Hawaii, obviously. So I got the Daily Star guy, Michael Lev. He'll be on at 5:40 to 6 o'clock to the end of the show. And then in between now and then, I'll just talk kind of with you and we'll talk sports. If anybody wants to call in, please do. 790-2040. And then at 5:20, I had scheduled something with Jeremy Herr. He's in charge of the Tucson Disc Golf Association.
When is the Arizona Star?
5:40.
Oh, 5:40. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought, oop, train wreck. They're both at 5:20?
No, 5:40.
Okay, 5:40.
Yeah, I just said it first. He's at 5:40 and Jeremy Herr is at 5:20. He's in charge of the Tucson Disc Golf Association. They have a big tournament this weekend, and I thought in getting this email last week, I thought it'd be cool to talk about. And then because tomorrow's a hectic day before the game and a lot of things going on, I figured, well, today would be a good day to talk about it. And then I realized that tonight's the first night of the Lute Olsen Fantasy Camp. So Steve is a little flustered and all over the place today. I call that every day.
You're just a busy, busy man.
A busy dude, yeah. Yeah. My heart rate is about, you know.
Not only are you busy, you are in demand.
Oh, sure. If I could just get paid for this, I'd be okay.
Busy. You got the basketball fantasy thing, you know. You're a big part of that.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens tonight and look forward to it. Anybody wants to call in now, they can call in 790-2040. Any football questions for this weekend? I think Arizona will win, obviously. I think.
You know what my biggest concern is about the game Saturday?
You're asking me, can I guess? Health. Yeah. If they can stay healthy.
Go ahead. No.
Okay, then I don't know.
You remember what happened when they played Houston last year?
Oh, yeah, sure. That was a pivotal game.
They were not ready for that game.
No.
That, to me, was on the coaches.
Well, there's a lot on the coaches. You know why?
And there's a lot on the coaches for this game.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. I think the Houston game last year was huge because, well, you know who used to coach there, right?
Yes.
Sumlin.
Yes.
And then they had something to prove. You know, you left us a while back. You moved to Texas A&M. We're worthy just as you are, and we're going to kick your butt and
Which
show you
Which makes you wonder if Coach Sumlin wasn't truly prepared, thinking, you know, hey, you know, they may not be all that upset with me when I come back. He may not have just been mentally prepared himself for how they were going to react to
wasn't
Arizona.
Wasn't that the second game of the year, though?
I think it was.
Yeah, so they should have been ready. They had already played one game. Yeah. And I think, wasn't Khalil injured in that game? I think he had.
That's the game he was injured in, and he never really got over that injury.
No. So I'm sure that played a big part of it. But I don't disagree with you. Are they going to be ready? This is one of those games that you have to be mentally prepared because you're in this place called paradise to some.
Yeah, it's a lot is on the coaches in this game against Hawaii. In my opinion, they have got to have the team prepared. All you have to do is think back to the Houston game.
Yeah, I know. I get it.
Anyway, that's. where I'm at on the game, I'm got my fingers crossed.
No. So you're going to watch, but you're not a complete fan. You're just going to watch.
No, I'm a Wildcat fan.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
I mean, my high school mascot was Wildcats too. So, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of a natural transition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get it. But
I'm not.
Good luck to you.
I'm not a big booster. You know.
Sure.
I'm not a big money contributor. I don't own a seat in the stadium for life.
Let me ask you something. So you're an Oakland Raider fan. So on Mondays, are you upset? Or on Sunday mornings, are you upset after a win or a loss?
I don't let what happens with the Raiders upset me.
What about the Cats? No?
No.
Yeah, see, so now that you know that.
During the game, if I see a bonehead play, you know, I might rise a couple of feet off the couch not desperation, but in irksome. Is that a word?
Yeah, frustration.
Frustration. But other than that, but you know, a few minutes later, it's gone. You know, no big deal. It's just a game.
Yeah. No. That's why I haven't been a fan. I haven't had any sleepless nights for years, decades now, because I don't really care who wins or who loses.
And you don't, it sounds to me like you don't follow a college team much. Maybe you did back in the New Mexico days, but the only team I've heard you talk much about is the Warriors, as far as how they're doing.
Right. It's easy to follow a front runner or two winner.
What's the word about the possibility that Aaron Gordon might be involved in a trade that would get him to the Warriors? Have you heard anything?
No, I have not, but you must be hearing things.
There goes Tom.
He's hearing things again. This internet invention has really turned you into a hearing aid guy.
Help me out, anybody. 790-2040. Has there been some talk recently about a trade that would involve moving Aaron Gordon from Orlando to Oakland?
You're asking? What are you doing? I'm asking
for people to tell me I'm either right or wrong, or I'm imagining things.
Let me tell you, we've gone places where people call in to you and you bite on bad information. We're not going to go there.
Oh, I'm not asking for someone to call in with bad information. All right.
You know what I'm saying? Here we go. We have the internet in front of us. You can find it right there. Because remember last time some guy said something stupid, I said, that's not possible, and kind of said... he's going to be in the dunk contest. I know that. I saw that maybe a couple weeks ago. I have not seen any trade things with him. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. It's only, what is it, August? Long way away.
All right. This is August 13th.
From where?
This story is from...
Let's talk about credibility.
Fadeawayworld.net.
Oh, okay. Forget it. Have you ever heard that place before?
No,
okay,
I haven't.
Okay, then here you go.
Let me look. Let me see.
Fadeawayworld.net. Okay.
SB Nation, Blue Man Hoop. Blue Man Hoop.
You know why? One guy writes it, and everybody else writes the same thing and don't attribute it. I'll believe it when I believe it. This is what journalism has come to.
247sports.com says four Warrior players are eligible for trades December 15th.
But
this is from last year.
Yes. See, you're bringing up stuff that's old.
Yeah, well, no.
It means nothing.
This business with Aaron Gordon was fairly recently.
Well.
Fairly recent. All right.
There you go.
We can't find a credible...
That's a week ago, and it's from fadeawayworld.net. I have never heard of that. And you might as well put the Inquirer on that thing.
Whoops. I spelled Aaron's name wrong. Okay. Maybe that's the problem.
No, that ain't the problem. The problem is you believe in this stuff. We're good. I don't want to talk about it anyway. He'll be fine.
All right.
Aaron Gordon.
I'm sorry I brought it up.
Okay. As long as nobody's calling and saying, hey, I got a tip for you.
Messing with your Warriors.
No. Just messing with the news. We'll see.
July 1st, that's not soon enough or recent enough.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you, Tom.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Tom. So we're going to get to...
What else can I do for you?
Don't mess up. Wait, what are you doing here? Over under city? What's this?
Chris Collingsworth's website that he bought. It's called Pro Football Something. But they don't just talk about pro football stuff. And I think it's mainly geared to people that have fantasy football leagues.
But go to the bottom of this page right here.
They've gotten into other stuff. All the way down?
No. I just wanted to see if he had a prediction because he talks about over and under and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, no, they've just been talking about the 11-point favorite that the Wildcats have been holding on to. So
Wait. Hawaii has the 93rd best opponent adjusted coverage grade, which surprisingly is an improvement on Arizona's ranking of 107. Yeah, I don't know what that means. It doesn't mean anything to me.
I think they're basing on Khalil Tate's performance last year compared to Cole McDonald, the quarterback for the Hawaii team's performance last year. And if you do that, Cole McDonald comes out better than Khalil. But I think Khalil probably says, hey, we'll see.
He wouldn't even care.
Now I'm talking for Khalil.
He wouldn't even. What did you drink today? Because he wouldn't even think about this stuff.
Carrot juice.
Yeah, but you must be putting something in there because you're a little uppity today with this stuff.
But see, they're talking about last year's performance.
What else do you have but last year? What else do you have but last year's? I will worry about it until Saturday, and even then I won't even worry about it.
This is the way that they structure their predictions for their fantasy league
But players. This is not fantasy league.
This is not fantasy league, no.
So they kind of
mix it up.
So this means nothing again, like I said for the third time.
Have we seen anything that means anything yet?
No.
It's not going to until 7:30 Saturday evening, our time.
Exactly. Talk to me at 10:30 when it's all over. And you'll say, you know, what the heck did we just watch? Or they played well enough to win.
I guess there's only two games. Ours and the Gators against the Miami Hurricanes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the Hurricanes are favored.
Did you find out if you have that TV station? You don't, do you?
No, but I think I know a way to get it. It's kind of sneaky, so I don't want to divulge it, lest somebody get upset with me. So I'll let you know Monday how it worked out.
Okay.
Well, see, I won't see you Monday, but I will Wednesday.
Yeah, Wednesday.
Next week.
Wednesday's another day. When we find each other again on every Wednesday through Friday.
So, I don't know. It'll be decided on the field of combat.
Mm-hmm. I'll predict pain for both teams. Let's take a break here, and we'll call Jeremy here on the other side of the break so we can get with that conversation. I'm sure people are tired of listening to you and me talk about this crazy stuff.
Probably.
Okay, here. Take a break on 10:30 The Voice. Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 10:30 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera. Welcome back, everybody. Let's get on the phone now and talk to Jeremy Herr of the Tucson Disc Golf Association. Jeremy, how are you?
Pretty good. How you doing, Steve?
Fine, thank you. Hey, this sport, I used to play it when I was a kid, so it's been around a while. It beats the heck out of you for conditioning. You must be in great shape.
I would love to think that, but I wouldn't say that's fully the case. But definitely able to get the sport in and have a good time.
But it is about, isn't it about that or no? Or is it more about golf?
It's more about golf. So it's more of pretty much typical, just like the average golf that most people know about. It's all the same rules rather than using a club and a ball. You're using your arm as the club and you have a frisbee as the ball. And you're aiming at a target, which we call a basket, instead of the hole like you would in traditional golf.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what I was thinking? Football frisbee. Uh-huh. Football frisbee.
Yes, yeah. So there is a difference. There's a
huge
difference. Yeah. So one is what we call it is a disc actually, because it isn't a frisbee because it's much sharper and goes much further, and you're able to manipulate it in different ways. But they are pretty much like cousins. So they are similar sports, but they do have different objectives and different skill levels and competition. They are very different.
Makes total sense. And I was thinking, I don't know why I was thinking football, but yeah, it makes sense. You guys must be pretty good.
I would think so. There's some of us here who are taking it kind of to the pro level and trying to travel here and there. And then a majority of the people playing the sport, it's a really good recreational activity to get outside, to get active, kind of get off the couch and have fun hanging out with your friends.
And do you actually play at golf places?
Yes, I'm actually a current PDGA member, and I'm not a touring professional, but I am a local professional to Arizona, traveling all over the state throughout the year to different tournaments, trying to compete and hopefully win some cash at each one.
Very cool. So do you have to, you know how golf, you have tee times, obviously. How does that work for you guys?
So we have two different ways that we do it. Traditionally, most tournaments do run off of tee times, especially the larger ones where there's more money involved and stuff like that with more competitors. So there is the tee times. But we do also do what's similar to most tournaments in golf that aren't the serious level. We have a shotgun start as well, where everyone's starting at the same time. But generally, for the bigger tournaments, it is a tee time kind of a thing.
So you must have some very good players in terms of sharks. Because, you know, because the par threes are probably pretty easy to get to, but, you know, just kind of like golf.
Exactly. Like, it's almost, you can pretty much imagine everything, the difficulties of golf, getting in trouble, getting off the fairways, finding OB hazards, taking your drop with the stroke penalty. Pretty much a lot of the rules from traditional golf have been transferred over to disc golf, and that's what makes it such a good transition. I used to play traditional golf before I found disc golf. And then after finding disc golf, it uses much more of your body, and it's much more, I would say, not difficult, because they're both difficult in their own ways, but there's a lot more room for error with disc golf. So I like the challenge, so that's why I kind of was drawn towards it.
So you talked about money. Is there a pro level?
Yeah, there is a pro level. I wouldn't say that it's at all near traditional golf, but that's kind of where we're looking for right now. It's similar to what we always mention is like snowboarding to skiing when snowboarding was first starting. None of the skiers were kind of familiar with it. They didn't want them around, so that's where we're at right now. Disc golf is trying to grow and get to the level of traditional golf, but we do have pro-level tournaments. We do have full-time touring pros who make a living off of it, but it's for Arizona. We have probably two or three pros that are traveling year-round, full-time job, but generally it is at the lower level.
Jeremy, real quick, let's go to the other phone line because we have a question for you from Juan. Juan, are you there?
I'm here.
Go ahead and ask a question.
Yeah, my son came, and he was avid, and we only found three courses in town. Are there more than that?
Go ahead.
So right now we do have that many disc golf courses in town. Currently, the option for running larger tournaments or having bigger events is to rent out courses, and that's generally what we do. So right now we do only have that many courses, which would be Groves, Sears Course. We have Santa Cruz, Quail Canyon, Sam Lena, and Rito right now. But we are trying to expand into more pretty much every year with the club.
Yeah, I went to one up by Marana. I never got shoes so muddy. It was in December.
Yeah, definitely monsoon season right now, so there's definitely different types of courses. I would suggest going to Quail Canyon, Sam Lena, or Groves, because you have grass in the park rather than dirt. With disc golf, it can be played anywhere. So monsoon season in Tucson with disc golf courses kind of gets a little hairy, but it's still a good time.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting, too. So thank you so much for Steve, for having someone on disc golf on.
Great. No, thanks.
You.
This is interesting. So Jeremy, how old are you? If you don't know,
I'm 28 years old.
And you started when?
I started when I just turned 21. So I've been playing about 7 years. Kind of one of those, as soon as I threw my first disc and played my first round, I was hooked. And ever since that, it's been a couple days a week, if not more than that, just kind of getting better and trying to move up through the pro status and just try to improve.
Yeah, so I was going to say, you know how golf is. It's kind of very inconsistent. You see some of the different winners from time to time, and I'm horrible at it. So my balls, my goals will go right or left, not down the middle. So you guys are probably down the middle all the time.
I would like to say that there is the higher level, that is the case, and generally the mistakes they're making are going OB, missing the fairways, missing putts, but most disc golfers who are at the higher level are super consistent with their lines and what they're throwing. But just like you said, that you do have the average golfer who is shanking left and right all the way up the fairway and dropping in for a triple bogey. So it is similar in that way, but we do have some consistent golfers here in Tucson, especially that are looking to shoot the hot round every round they play.
So you get out there at least twice a week?
Oh, yes, if not more. Especially right now, we have that tournament coming up this weekend, so I think most competitors in Tucson who are registered for that are trying to get in as much playing time as they can before the tournament comes.
I know that spectators are kind of, you know, they're there from time to time, but can you talk about the tournament this weekend?
Yeah, so it's the third annual 49er Open. We actually have to rent most golf courses out here in order to get some quality land where it makes people worthy of coming. So we rent 49er Country Club out on Tinka Verde. For 2 days, we get it in the afternoon. So about 12 o'clock, we have check-in. 2 o'clock is our shotgun start tee off. It's 2 rounds of 27 holes, and then Sunday afternoon we'll be crowning a winner. I actually did win it last year, so I'm hoping to go back to back this year as well.
And did you earn some money?
Yeah, so I won just over $500 last year. We're growing a little bit more this year. It is only a 100-person tournament. Our larger tournaments across the country, they'll have hundreds of people. So with our sport, we do have sponsorships, but most of our fees and our payments and our purse and all that does come from entries and then smaller sponsors.
Very cool. And so they come from all over or just the Southwest, like tomorrow's tournament or this weekend's tournament? Where they come from?
I would say majority of them are from Arizona. We do have some coming from Flagstaff. We have the Sholo area. A majority of the out-of-Tucson area players are coming from Phoenix, Mesa, anywhere just up north. But we also have some players coming from Sierra Vista. So when we run tournaments like this, this is a smaller, what we call a C-tier tournament. So it is on the smaller scale, but it still does draw competitors all from Arizona.
So what would be like the granddaddy of them all, or is there like a next step from this?
Yeah, so the tournament that just wrapped up was actually Pro World. So PDGA would be something if anyone's looking into trying to figure out what is disc golf and more information. The Professional Disc Golf Association is pretty much like the PGA, but the disc golf version of it. So they did just get done with Worlds, and that's our biggest one where there's a couple hundred competitors. The purses aren't quite to golf yet, so I believe first place won $10,000. But it's something, but it's not quite where everyone wants to be yet.
Sure, no, because you were talking about entry fees and you need the big sponsors and things like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
And realistically, it'll never get to be the golf of, you know.
Yeah, golf is just very large. It's for how long golf has been around, it's something that's it's gotten to where it's at for the time that it's been around, and disc golf's rather young compared to traditional golf, but it's just something we're striving for.
I would imagine it's a young man's game, but that you have some older, craftier type of players.
Yep, just the same as this, as traditional golf. I'm going to keep referring to that, but we do have Masters divisions. So this weekend at 49er, we'll have a 40-plus division and a 50-plus division, and we have an amateur division where they're not playing for cash, they're playing for prizes, and then we have the professional division where they are playing for cash.
Right, and you said how many will be participating?
100 are going to be playing this weekend.
Right, and what's the entry fee, like $60, $50?
It's not $90 for professionals and $70 for amateurs. With us having to rent out 49er, that does cut into our purse a little bit, but it's worth it for the venue that we have out there. It's really beautiful to be playing disc golf out there on the nice green grass and all the, it's just well kept out there, so we love being out there.
So I assume that it's fun to play on a crazy course, but it's very cool or easier to play on like Tucson Country Club where there's not a whole lot of obstacles.
Exactly. Like you could go to, if you were interested into it, if you went to, it's called Sears Park, right in the heart of Tucson. That's a course that any person could go to. You grab a putter, a driver, and a mid-range, and it's pretty straightforward. You're going to see the target in front of you. There's not going to be many obstacles. But when it gets to tournament time, we definitely are looking for the challenge. So there is a difference between the two.
Right. So what level are you at?
Right now, it's if you're so it's pretty much you're either going to have an amateur status or a professional status. Since I am taking money and I'm competing across the state trying to win money, I am the professional status through PDGA. So that's where I stand right now, and I've been a pro for about the last 2 years accepting cash.
So, okay, so in that pro league then, how good, if you're on a scale of 1 to 10, how good are you?
I would put myself at a 7 or 8 compared to the top level full-time job touring pros.
Wow.
I believe I'm a 10 at heart, but in reality I would say 8 or 9.
No, I get it. Hey, I consider myself good looking, but I'm not the judge.
Exactly. So the same thing, I expect to beat them. Doesn't matter who they are or what their title is or how long they've been playing. With just like golf, you can expect anyone to win on any weekend. It comes down to a focus game.
So I'm sure courses, what kind of courses do you like to play in, because I'm sure you have favorites in terms of difficulty and all that?
For me, I prefer to throw further because that's a hard thing to do in disc golf. So any holes that are close to 500 or 600 feet, those are the holes that I enjoy playing. But I do like tight technical. If you were to go to Flagstaff or Sholo, you're sometimes having to throw the disc between a 5 to 10 foot gap. So there's two different sides of it. It all depends on kind of the time of year or what we're feeling. But right now, since we're in the golf course mode, I'm really looking forward to throwing as far as I can and getting some, hopefully, 200-yard bombs out there with a good wind.
So do they teach this? Are you a teacher as well?
We're working on it. We actually, through Tucson Disc Golf Association, this last year we did a pilot program as like a junior education, but that was strictly for 18 and under. We're really trying to grow the youth in this sport here in Tucson. But in the next couple months, if people are on our Tucson Disc Golf Facebook page and they're checking the website of Tucson Disc Golf, they're going to see that we are going to be rolling out towards the end of this year a general all ages welcome clinics and educational like workshops for new beginners.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's a lot of fun, and there is some I'm sure healthy qualities to this, because you got to walk, you got to do a lot of things on the course.
Exactly, it's just getting outdoors instead of being at home inside the AC. Even on these hot days, you'll see most disc golf courses here in Tucson will have anywhere from 30 to 50 people every single night as soon as the sun starts going down and the cooler temperatures come out.
So I would assume that also that Arizona is probably a prime place because of the weather in the winter. And
that is correct.
Yeah, yeah. So we're like right now, where was the World Championships held?
The World Champions were just held in Peoria. So all the way across the country, it's, I believe they were over three or four courses through the week, and they had close to 500 competitors, and that's women's divisions, masters, pretty much anything you can think of in the professional aspect. They had that going on this last week, or it was 2 weekends ago.
Yeah. So they'll come here in the winter. So do the tournaments increase as the weather gets better?
Oh, definitely, especially on the East Coast. For us, no matter what time of year we do for Arizona, we're actually one of the first tour stops for the Professional Disc Golf Association. So in February of next year, that's when all of the traveling, they're making a living, they'll come to Arizona. They'll be up in the Fountain Hills area and Phoenix area, and they'll be staying here for a couple weeks getting ready for the first stop. But that's, like you mentioned, when the weather's getting better, February is when you usually expect all of them to be coming around this side of the country.
Well, I'll be full disclosure, I got this note for you from Visit Tucson. So Visit Tucson must love you guys.
Yeah, that's I always appreciate the good comments. So
yeah, no, because you must be bringing people in to stay the weekend.
Exactly, and that's something where about 4 years ago now, actually, it was the Arizona State Championship, and we had close to 200 competitors here, all staying in hotels, all spending their money here. So it's one of those things that we're really trying to build the revenue in Tucson, so people like Visit Tucson do start to recognize that we are bringing revenue to Tucson, and we are trying to slowly grow. And in the 5 years that I've been playing, there's already been an increase, but the goal is obviously to grow it more and more.
Well, Jeremy, I appreciate talking to you. Good luck. We'll probably talk again when you have another tournament going on here. Good luck this weekend. And you are playing, right?
Yes, definitely. I'll be out there. So if anyone wants to come and spectate, they will be renting out carts to spectators starting at 2 o'clock is when the tee-off is, and we'll be out there pretty much till sundown.
Where is this at again?
This is at 49er Country Club off of Tanca Verde on the east side of Tucson, near Houghton and Tanca Verde.
Great.
And
great.
It's 49er Country Club.
Well, good luck again, and have fun.
All right, thank you so much, Steve. You have a great day.
Great, too. Thank you. That was Jeremy Herr of the Tucson Disc Golf Association. Let's take a quick break here. I think we're going to get Michael Lev on the other side talking about U of A football in Hawaii. I'm sure he's out there already. So take a break here on 1030 The Voice. Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera, your host, and now on the phone we have the Arizona Daily Star's Michael Lev. Michael, how are you?
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Hey, I was going to say, you must be on the beach just relaxing, getting ready for the big game, only to hear that you're not there yet.
No, I'm still in the desert, heading up to Phoenix, catching a flight tomorrow morning. We'll be in Honolulu, hopefully, if everything goes according to plan, by tomorrow afternoon. Actually, the whole family is going up and going with me, and we're staying for a few days afterward, you know, since Arizona has a bye.
Smart man.
So it sets up nicely for the Lev family, and I think also for the Wildcats.
Your wife will love you more, and your kids will vote you Father of the Year. Nice move. So I'm curious.
Win-win,
exactly. I'm curious, when you covered USC back in the day, did you go out there to place Hawaii, watch a cover game?
Yeah, I think the last time I was there was for a USC-Hawaii game.
Yeah.
And I want to say that was 2010. Which would have made it a Lane Kiffin's first season
Wow.
as coach. I can't really remember much more about what happened. I'm sure USC won, because if they had lost, I'm sure I would remember it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have been out there.
So the reason I asked that question, I've been back a few times covering basketball, football, maybe a couple games. But I think one of the hidden gems for this is a mainland team going out to Hawaii, going out there, enjoying or at least taking in, soaking in the atmosphere for a day or two. The team isn't always prepared. It happens a lot. The Hawaii plays really well, makes the spread or whatever. But you've seen it firsthand. I mean, that's not a secret, is it?
No. I mean, I like the fact that the team left yesterday,
mm-hmm.
Which gives them a little bit more time to acclimate to conditions, the time zone differential. You know, if they do have any sort of team activities planned, they have plenty of time to do them while still being able to, you know, turn their attention back toward the game. I thought Kevin Sumlin made a good point the other day also, that a lot of the guys on the team are from Southern California. So it's not like they've never seen palm trees or they've never been to the beach. You know, there are people from L.A. who will tell you that, you know, Honolulu is sort of similar feel to L.A. in a lot of ways. Obviously, it's a little smaller, a little more tropical. But I don't think that's going to be a problem for them. The fact that Hawaii is pretty winless team, and plays kind of a funky offense, could be a potential problem for them. 30 p.m. kickoff in Honolulu, and it's going to be muggy, and could be a problem for them. But I don't think like the distraction of Hawaii is going to be that big of an issue.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. I think the fact that it's the first game, so he'll have the attention right away. I mean, if this was maybe game 6 or 7, when they take a break and go out there, that's a little bit more different. So in the camp that just finished and got them ready for this, what impressed you the most, even though you couldn't watch a whole lot of practice?
I would say that the overall size and depth of the team seems to be in a better place now than it was a year ago or a couple years ago. They definitely, you know, added bodies on the defensive line, and really seems like they're going to be able to go too deep at a critical position where you really need to rotate and have fresh guys out there. You know, the second unit really consists of Fenton Connolly, Tylan Wilborn, Justin Belknap, and Mikey Irving. There's a lot of experience there, a lot of college starts in that second unit, which is nice. Everyone's been talking about, you know, the wide receiver position, how it's potentially problematic, but if you actually look at what those guys look like it is an impressive, it's an impressive group. Almost, you know, the majority of the guys are 6 feet or taller, and Kevin Sumlin and his staff have sort of trended toward bigger-bodied wide receivers, and that group will go through some growing pains, but I think the upside is greater than it's been in a while, and I think if they're able to get through those growing pains, that we're going to see one of the better units in the Pac-12 before it's all said.
Wow, which is a big deal. If that happens, this team could be better than I think it's going to be. If it doesn't happen, obviously it won't be, but that's a little hope from Michael Lev.
It's just a matter of when. You know, I like the talent a lot. Like, I think Jamari Joyner has got the potential to be a star. Drew Dixon has, like, the measurables that you would want in an outside receiver. But they're both still young, and they're both relatively new to the position. So, you know, you don't know when it's going to happen. Is it going to happen midway through the season, like 3 games into the season, maybe the end of the season, maybe next year? That's the question.
Right. What was your best story for this fall, this last month? Maybe a story or two that you really liked writing. It was kind of a ho hum to me. Maybe not to you.
I think Scotty Young Jr. was the interview that stuck out to me the most. Storyline as well. He was a guy who came in, had a really big and, you know, strong initial training camp as a freshman. Everyone was talking about Scotty Young and Troy Young, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got in trouble off the field.
Right.
Got arrested. you know, got into a fight with his girlfriend, and the altercation became physical, and, you know, and then suspended the following offseason. He really didn't know what to make of this guy, you know. He's reinstated. We didn't get to talk to him. I think one game he was available afterward, and it's really hard to get a feel for a guy in that setting when he's up at the podium with a bunch of his teammates just right after a game and so forth. A little bit banged up last year. And we kept hearing things this offseason about how Scotty had matured in a major way. He'd grown up. He'd become more of a leader. And then when we talked to him, you really got that sense, you know, that this was one of those cases of someone who had came in as a kid, and he's going to leave college as a man. And I love those types of stories. I think there's great value in the college experience. You know, it's a great time of growth for people who are 18, 19, 20 years old. And not only that, but I think Scotty Young could be on the verge of having his best season since he was able to participate in the offseason program for the first time since he's been at Arizona.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. Under the things you say, I totally agree with you. I think one of the other guys that needed to grow up a little bit and seems like he's saying all the right things. I'll see it when I believe it or believe it when I see it. Is the quarterback you read about, Khalil Tate?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the true test for Khalil when it comes to his maturity is how he handles the post game after a loss.
No question.
You know, which has been a problem for him, and he's kind of gone into a shell and acted extremely immaturely in those situations, if that's the word. And, you know, he needs to understand, and I think he does understand better now than before, like what all of the responsibilities are when you're the starting quarterback at a Power 5 program. You know, it's not just your performance on the field. It's the way you carry yourself off the field. You're a representative of your university. You're representing your teammates. So we'll see, you know. I mean, I understand that, you know, you're frustrated after a loss. You're mad at yourself. But, you know, that's a situation if you're the quarterback where you have to step to the mic and take responsibility and, you know, just really say all the right things. And you know, he struggled with that last year, and we'll see how he does it this year.
Yeah, no question. In fact, I remember writing a column in whatever it was, March, when we talked to him after spring practice. I said, I'm really impressed with how he's kind of grown up since the end of the season when we all saw what you saw in talking about maturity. So, okay, then now we talked to him a couple of times here, and I think David Kelly asked him, you know, what's going to happen with that in conversations after losses, and he says, well, we just can't lose. It was funny, but it was funny, but you get the point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's like a focal point for him heading into the season, but I do know that there are people within the program who have talked to him about how to handle those situations better than he has. You know, the true test of someone's character, the character of a football team, is how they handle adversity. You know, it's easy when you win, easy when things go your way. You know, how do you deal with it when they don't go your way? You know, that's when your true colors come out. And, you know, I'll give him the, everything last year was new for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being a starting quarterback, being a Heisman candidate, being on magazine covers, all of that stuff was new. So now he's had a whole year and figure out how to deal with it. He's a senior now. He understands what's at stake. And he should also understand that, you know, this is his future.
Yeah.
The NFL teams are going to pay attention to this sort of thing, too. And they, you know, do a lot of research,
mm-hmm.
investigation into the characters of the players. You know, there's a lot of guys who have talent, but it's guys who also have character and work ethic who make it the furthest. And if he wants to have a career in the NFL, you know, he's going to have to prove himself in those ways as well.
Yeah, no question. In fact, I've said this before, this is his free agent year, pretty much.
Yeah, no, that's a great call.
Yeah.
It is. He's auditioning
yes.
for for the next level, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, over under, just real quick, how many yards will he rush for this game?
This game, I'd say like 55.
Yeah.
About where I'd set it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't know if he. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm pretty sure he didn't go over 50 in any game last year. I want to say like in the 40s might have been as high. So. If he can get into the 50, 60, 70 range each game, timely runs, third and seven, you know, break free for 12 yards, you don't need him to be the guy he was necessarily in 2017. You need him to be some facsimile of that player and, you know, take advantage of those opportunities when they present themselves.
Yeah, no question. What would be impressive to you after the game on Saturday? So you're writing your stories. What would impress you the most? A blowout? Just a steady, nice game? What would be pleasing to Michael Lev?
Yeah, well, you know, Kevin Sumlin's theme throughout the offseason has been consistency. And Arizona was an inconsistent team from game to game last year, and even from quarter to quarter. Let's look at the ASU game as a primary example. You know, for three quarters, they're dominating. And then they blow it in the fourth. So I want to see them put together four good quarters of football, you know. We rarely saw that on the road last year. They got off to really bad starts against Houston, Utah, Washington State. Never really able to recover in those games. So I want to see, from beginning to end, just a solid, steady performance. And if they can do that, I think it'll be a really good sign for everything that's to come afterward.
What cannot happen? What would be the thing that said, you know, this did not impress me?
It's a repeat of those disastrous games last year, the games in which they were not competitive, you know, where they came out against Houston, Utah, and Washington State, and they were just flat from the beginning. They were never in the game. We can't have that.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And that cost a lot of games last year outside of the ASU debacle at the end of the game. J.J. Taylor probably be the guy to depend on a lot tomorrow or Saturday.
I think this is a running game. I think this is one of those games where they're going to come out with the mentality of we're going to run the football. We are going to impose our will physically on this opponent, kind of like the Oregon State game last year, as an example. And to me, Hawaii, I think is vulnerable against the run. You know, they allowed over 200 rushing yards per game last season. I think this is a game in which Arizona can exceed that number by a lot. One of those games where maybe they can go over 300 yards, maybe even approach 400 yards on the ground. And if they do that, then everything else is easier. You know, the passing game is easier. Mix in some Khalil runs here and there. But I think it's a game in which they're going to rely heavily on J.J. Taylor and that deep stable of running backs.
That's why I totally agree with you. In fact, I'm going to go your over 55 yards with Khalil.
Well, you know what? It all kind of works hand in hand. If the running game is working, that opens things up for Khalil on the outside. Or if Khalil shows early in the game that he's willing to pull the ball and run to the outside, then it opens things up in the inside for the running backs. So, I don't know. I mean, the whole thing with Khalil is, like you said before about his sort of behavior after the game, you'll believe it when you see it. I feel the same way about the running. You know, we have to see it in a game where he's susceptible to being tackled, because it's easy to do it in practice,
right?
When you know you're not going to be hit.
Right. No, I totally agree with you. So we'll see. Everyone's talking about, you talk about the defense being better or whatever. Everyone seems to be better. I just think that other teams are going to be better as well. I think, and obviously the soft schedule to begin the season. We'll see what happens in the next few weeks.
I think it's a better roster than last year. So the end results might not reflect the degree to which the program and the roster have improved.
Yeah.
But I'm cautiously optimistic heading into it.
Yeah, which means what? I know we haven't talked to you for a while, but so can you make a prediction on how many games are going to win this year?
Yeah, I've had them going 7-5.
Yeah, that's right. I think we talked.
That is contingent. Yeah, that's contingent on them going 3-0 in the preseason.
Yeah,
which I think it's doable.
Yeah,
and I also I think it's a must. They have to.
Yeah, to at least go 7-5.
To at least go 7-5. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think the ceiling is a little higher than that. If Khalil is awesome, if he's the guy he was last year, he's banged up, he's not running, then I think you're again looking at somewhere around 500.
Yeah, yeah. And they can't have that. Tucson's waiting, can't wait to see Khalil run and run and run. So we'll see what happens on Saturday. Safe travels. Safe travels. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Enjoy your family with on the road. Thank you very much. That was Michael Lev of the Arizona Daily Star, headed to Hawaii. Good luck with that. A busy time of the year, first game of the year. He'll have his family at the game. That's cool. And we're almost wrapping up today's show. A little eclectic show here with the disc golf and Michael Lev of football. I totally agree with everything he said. You're going to see a different Khalil. Hopefully takes the losses, which there'll be some, well. And, I think a lot of, and I wrote this maybe a month ago. I'm pulling for Khalil. I want him to have a great, great year. He, I know deep down he's a good guy. Just unfortunately how he, how it kind of went about.
What, if anything, do you want to say about the basketball fantasy camp that you're being involved with? When does it start?
It starts tonight with a dinner, and then tomorrow basketball all day. So in the morning they'll practice with each other and blah blah blah, and then like at noon they do a draft. The ex guys do a draft and pick their teams, and that's the funny part, you know, like a war room type of thing. And
how many teams?
Four teams full of eight players.
And they'll play through the weekend.
Through the week, yeah. Sunday morning is the title game, and these guys are competitive. They don't want to lose.
And the games will all be in one place.
Yes.
Where?
Yes, Sporting Chance. It's kind of not public because this is their time.
There's not room for a lot of.
Yeah,
spectators.
Yeah, no. But it's a lot of fun. So thanks, everybody. We've got to call it a day here on 10:30 The Voice. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. I'll be in tomorrow.